This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, Macca and Tass.
G'day, Macca. Thank you for that. And we have in the studio Dr. Paul Stranger, who's a professor of political history at Monash University. Good morning, Paul.
Hi, Tass.
How are you?
I'm well. I ran here. I'm feeling good. A bit sweaty.
That's very, very impressive. And for those, of course, you can't see, but Paul's turned up in a very bright purple T-shirt and short shorts, clutching onto his folder with his notes. So, Paul, what did you make of our Saturday night's election outcome?
Well, I was on air calling the results, so I was shocked, like I think most people. Like, I predicted a victory to Labor, and I was asked just as the count began to predict their sort of majority, their position in the Legislative Assembly after the election, and I thought around about the 49 mark. So to see them now in the mid-50s, maybe going higher, you know, what struck me as the night began and we started to get the figures, that this was a little bit like 2002, a BRAC slide, although the dynamics are different, because I think of the significant overlay, the federal overlay is much more significant.
So do you believe that that had a major impact?
Look, I think you can interpret the result in several ways, in several dimensions to this result. If you look down the Frankston line and seats like Bentley, Frankston itself, Mordialloc, Carrum, they swung around 11% to the Labor Party. Now, I think that's an affirmation of the Andrews government's activity during the last 4 years. I think there's a large element of that there. You know, the rail crossing removal, the schools investment, all sorts of things. But I think when you turn to seats like Hawthorn, like Caulfield, like Brighton,
about?
Like Sandringham.
And Box Hill. Yeah.
Box Hill's, I reckon, slightly different. And we'll come back to Box Hill. But I think that's a very clear expression of the Liberal heartland saying, we don't like this current brand of liberalism that's now on display. It was on display here in Victoria with the muscular sort of conservative law and order oriented campaign. And of course, it's very much on display in Canberra, the overthrow of Turnbull, issues like climate change and so forth. I think that message isn't resonating. It's as if the coalition is now treating Victoria indeed as electorally expendable, which is a very odd sort of political calculation,
I think.
It's
a very deeply problematic issue for the Liberal Party, isn't it?
Well, they can lose the next federal election here, you know, comfortably.
Just in Victoria.
Oh, yes.
Victoria.
We shouldn't forget the arithmetic. They're now a minority government. There are several seats in Victoria. Their position was already weakened by redistribution earlier this year. Seats like Corangamite is now nominally Labor indeed. But there's several seats where they are under significant pressure in Victoria, so they can shore up Queensland all they like, appealing to the base.
Mm.
And I don't know what this base really is.
The base has changed,
well,
hasn't
the base
it?
Has changed, and the base is complex. I think it's even more complex in Queensland. Southeast Queensland is a different place as well. And this idea that, you know, this abrasive conservatism appeals to the Australian electorate.
Paul, come. I want to come back to Victoria. You've put Ringwood and Box Hill on hold for the moment, and I'd like to go back there because Macca did actually celebrate the change of hands in Box Hill for, I suppose, political reasons.
Well, political reasons, and Robert Clark was a representative of hardcore right-wing conservatism.
Anti-LGBTI gender, actually.
Yeah, and, you know, he said some appalling things about our community, but he was the only Liberal in the lower house that voted against the same-sex relationships bill.
So what happened? What happened in Box Hill and Ringwood?
That's a really interesting observation, Mac. Look, with Box Hill, I wonder if the electorate is as switched on with their local member and these attitudes. But what I will say about Box Hill, and I think a really interesting thing would now be to do, is to look at this result and look for the correlation with ethnic diversity as well. Because that's another thing that strikes me about the contemporary Liberal Party. Victoria is, and Melbourne in particular, obviously, is a very diverse, complex place. And, you know, we do have electorates where we have more than 50% of the population were born in non-English speaking backgrounds. We have electorates where there are more than 30% Muslim. We have electorates with large number of Hindus and so on and so forth.
And Box Hill and Ringwood fit that bill?
Well, to some degree, I think Box Hill a little bit does. And I think, again, that sort of, that abrasive law and order message, and it had undertones of race underneath it, again, I think, was abrasive at least to those electorates and, I think, alienating. So, again, it seems to me that the Liberal Party is, it's not speaking to diversity, it's not speaking to complexity, it's not speaking to modernity at the moment.
Sounds really seriously out of touch to me.
Well, that's the impression it's giving, and it's now getting increasingly very difficult to see how they can turn this situation around before next year's
federal. What did you make of yesterday's school student strike and the sort of commentary that came out of Canberra?
Well, again, it struck me as a similar. There's a lack of sensitivity. There's a lack of a capacity to understand again and even tolerate that the world is a kaleidoscope, that the modern contemporary electorate is different and it's shifting. So a party has a problem when it narrows, when it's no longer representative, and that's the message at the moment. Historically, Victorian Labor was a bit like this, Tass, because, you know, the history of Victoria was, of course, it was a Liberal
stronghold forever,
and Victorian Labor had a history as a party of being very ideological, very doctrinaire, and didn't actually appeal to the electorate. And what we get a sense of at the moment, that they've swapped almost shoes, if you like. It's now the Liberal Party that's increasingly become doctrinaire, ideological, narrowing, and it's not endeavouring to appeal more broadly.
I was amused by a comment by Miranda Devine and Janet Albrightson that in various different journals, one of the reasons they said the Liberals lost is because they weren't strong enough on safe schools. Now, if you look at the logic of that, okay, they were going to dump it, but apparently they weren't vocal enough. So all those people then change their votes to Labor, apparently, because Labor supports safe schools. So the very logic of it. But again, getting back to this base, you know, they talk about the base, Well, if the base stuck with the party because of the pretty right-wing nature of most of the campaign, then it says the size of Liberal base is about 30%. That's it.
Well, the coalition base, if you add the Nationals, 35. Yeah. But that's right. It's not a base that can win them elections. And that's right. And that view, that there is still that view within some sections of the Liberal Party, they need to double down on all this stuff. That is the solution. It strikes me as a perverse analysis of what's going on. And, you know, the writing's on the wall on that sort of stuff. And it's almost, maybe they need a more cathartic moment, and the federal election will provide them with one. But, you know, they do have serious problems.
I call, you know, they're the flat earthers. Like, really? I mean, you know, and I speak to a number of federal Liberals, and they are in absolute despair. And this is progressive Liberals and conservative Liberals, and they are in despair as to their prospects at the election for different reasons. The one thing they all have in common is they do the numbers. And, you know, the most recent ReachTel poll in Higgins shows a 14% decline in the Liberal vote for Kelly O'Dwyer.
That essentially could switch, couldn't it?
So you could end up... But then look at the figures in Malvern. Michael O'Brien held up fairly well. You know, Paran looks like it's going to stay green. That's part of Higgins. But, yeah, 14%.
Paul, at the risk of asking you to gaze into your crystal ball, what do you think is going to happen next with the Liberal Party? What's your prediction? In Victoria.
Well, that you know, it seems they're on a fork in a road. You know, do they look to their history? Do they realise that generally when they have been a strong, effective electoral party, they have been a middle of the road? Their tradition here is of social liberalism. You know, they were. And if they read their history, you know, Alfred Deakin, Menzies said in the 1940s he was setting out to create a party that wasn't reactionary. Mm. So whether they embrace those traditions, you know, they do have a issue too with recruitment. There's issues in their organisation with some level of infiltration of people of very religious
and extreme
inspired views. Well, whether they're, you know, we can park that for a moment, but again, you know, an effective party has to be broad. It has to, if you're aspiring to be a party of government, that is, you need to represent to some degree the electorate at large.
So you haven't answered my question. What do you predict will happen
to the Liberal Party? Mm. Oh, look, I'm not as there is sort of some cataclysmic now predictions going on that the Liberal Party may split. I'm not of that view. I think most of our major parties have proved remarkably resilient. And look, it's not so long ago we were debating how the way that Labor held together its sort of old sort of traditions and it's the more progressive elements. The moment Labor seems suddenly revived, its primary vote went over 40%. Yes. Goodness gracious, I think many in the Labor Party had despaired of that happening ever again. So the parties are resilient, but I do think, you know, I think next year's looking, federally is looking very bad for them. New South Wales is even looking dicey for them. So it's whether they, you know, can come to terms with what's going on.
So there is a state election in New South Wales March next year. What's the sort of talk about what's going to happen there?
Dynamics are quite different in New South Wales, but nonetheless there's a sense of a contagion effect now catching on. And I think the New South Wales Liberals would now be seriously concerned. There was a poll that came out today that suggested they've fallen behind in New South Wales. So, you know, there's not much good news, you know, at least in the immediate future.
Sounds like a cascade effect.
Yes, that's right. And there's just a sense that the electorate now has made up its mind about these things and, you know, they're in for a very difficult next, say, 6 months or so. Mm.
I think the Liberals have become victim to political cannibalism. They're eating their own.
Well, and that's another day. When elements of your political party are more intent in policing an ideological position in their own party and waging war against their own, then you're in a dangerous position.
I was looking at, Craig Kelly. Is it Kelly?
Yes, yes.
And, you know, is he going to get pre-selection? Is he going to stand as an independent? If he gets pre-selection, which I don't think he's going to because the numbers are against him, but if he does, I'll give you a prediction. He'll lose that seat. The government will lose that seat. If he stands as an independent, probably the only thing he'll get out of it will be his deposit back. Because the polls in his electorate show him way, way behind. Way behind.
So do you think as a whole, apart from having lost their way and not listening to the electorate and not representing the diverse communities that live in our nation now, do you think that they're just making really poor judgments?
I think a government under pressure makes poor judgments. Yeah. I mean, and you know, we saw that also, you know, during the Rudd-Gillard period to some extent. A government, once a government's under pressure, there's that corrosive inevitability probably of defeat. Panic sets in. You make poor decisions.
Paul, we spoke with...
We saw that, say, Wentworth, the poor decision about the embassy and so forth. It has that effect.
We spoke with Michael Kroger exactly this time last week, actually.
Okay.
And he predicted a Liberal win.
He did.
And he
actually
said we should look at... one of the seats he said we should watch is Mulgrave.
No, I heard, and I mentioned that on the broadcast on Saturday night. Yes, that turned out well.
It did, and he's now resigned, so we don't know if he's ever going to come back on, which is
well, as president of the Liberal
president,
Party.
As president,
he may come on as an independent commentator. But one of the questions that I put to him was, were they not doing their due diligence when they were selecting their candidates? You know, had something gone a bit astray?
And he said you can't check people's social media when you've only got a couple of days to do it.
Yeah, he basically said they didn't have enough time to do a thorough due diligence on their candidate.
We shouldn't ignore another problem that's afflicted them of late, of course, is issues around finance and money and funding of this campaign. So I think, you know, often major parties project an image of, you know, they're running a campaign, and we don't quite understand how it's all held together by sticky tape underneath. And they had a lot of issues that have been running in terms of finance and funding. So that was another dimension to this, as well as the organisational tensions.
Well, they've now sold their building, $37 million, so Kroger's last act.
Paul, we've run out of time, unfortunately, but it's been really great to have you in the studio and to hear your analysis. You still haven't really answered my question about what you think the Liberal Party's going to do next.
Bang!
But perhaps we'll keep that one on ice and bring you in for another conversation at some point.
Exactly, Tess. And thank you, Tess and Macca.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
It's great to have you in the studio.
Hi, this is John Borghetti, the CEO of Virgin Australia. Just like Joy 94.9, we are flying high and proud.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.